your address, Denise? Give me your name.
Denise Beeswax. D-E-N-I-S-E.
D-E-N-I-S-E, good, got it. Address?
Box 8, Malvern. Yeah, I was thinking of making a necklace with that same stitch.
Yeah, postal.
But I never really thought of bracelets. Postal code?
Yeah.
NOL1T0.
She's gonna be distractible, I can see it. Get her concentration.
She wonders.
Maybe I better take these off. Your home phone number?
289-5045. If I can pay my phone bill.
Your work number, do you have a work number? Do you work,
No, I don't work. I have two small children, so I'm home.
Your date of birth?
August 21st, 1962.
And your place of birth?
London, Ontario.
And your band membership?
12.
Not your number, just like Muncie Chippewa Nighter.
42.
Muncie Chippewa. No.
Muncie Chippewa.
No, it's Chippewa,
Chippewa
of the Thames.
Okay. Oh God, here we go.
Yeah,
no,
42.
It's
a little bit like interviewing.
No,
you.
We don't need the number. We're just looking for, you know, like the Chippewa, the band, what they classify the band. Like I'm old Ojibwe, she'd be Chippewa, or Nyam, Delaware, or something.
All of the above.
Okay. What type of craft do you do?
I do quilting, beadwork, leather work. Sweetgrass baskets. I can do quill work, but I don't have any quills. Woodcraft. A little, some.
You mentioned you do some storytelling and story writing as well.
And I'm a writer. I recently just finished a book, and it's Tales of the Ojibwe.
Oh, yeah.
And I use characters from the traditional, from the legends, and I created my own stories around them.
Mm.
And plus I collect stories, store them up in my head that people tell me. So.
I can tell you a good one.
What? She's trying to get her book published.
But I can't find any money.
Oh, there's a lot of money.
Oh, that's what everybody
says. Everybody says. I called all over the country.
I've got a name at home that was given to me from this guy from Ottawa. Like, I know a guy from Parliament. He gave me a call about 3 years ago, and he told me if I ever needed any money, just to let him know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I could also maybe get you in contact with a woman that I know. She's, you know, in the story. She's a writer. She's well-known for 10 years.
Where did you
phone? I phoned up north to Curve Lake, Georgia Elston, and she recently published Basil Johnson's novel, so she never had any finances to go ahead with mine, eh? So.
Sometimes you can get government funding to do the initial printing. And
yeah, that's what I wanted to do, was to have it printed, eh? And then I could send it to a publisher later, because a lot of the publishing companies won't publish from a manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that.
The other possibility,
and it's really hard to find somebody
to
take it.
Some of the women's presses. God, I don't know if they're still working. It's Waterloo, the women's press in Waterloo, and some of the smaller groups like that are really looking for publications by women.
Like, it would cost me $3,000 to have it printed for 1,000 copies, eh?
Yeah.
And, I don't know, just hard to find any money anyway.
It is. It's real hard now.
I spent 5 years working on it, and it's really discouraging not to be able to find any money. It's not like there's 500 Indian authors looking to be, you know, published.
Did you hit up some of the government offices, like Secretary of State?
No. Well, I called Indian Affairs in Ottawa, and I called Indian Affairs in London here, and I called the Canadian Council of Fine Arts, and they give grants directly to publishers. They don't give grants to writers.
Okay, I'll give you a name to call. And she's been doing her own books. I don't know where she gets them published, but she asked me to do the poems in the books plus the pictures for her books, and she gets hers published. You never heard of Rosemary Moffett? She's a native Cree.
Yeah, I have heard of her.
Okay, I'll give
I
you
think
the
I've read one.
Maybe you can ask whereabouts.
Where she gets
yeah.
in money from.
But sometimes citizenship and culture is another one.
Yeah, I've got
the Native Community Branch. And, I was trying to think of all the places that I applied to for the grant. And,
we opened up a pizza place.
Is that your pizza place?
Yeah.
Neat.
But it's my son's place. I'm in business with his wife.
I try to incorporate morals that I think are prevalent to Indian people today into my stories, and rather than going with traditional legends, I could probably write a book, a collection of legends, but I think they would be more or less, what I write myself would be more or less along the storyline, because they couldn't really be called legends because they're not handed down. I create them myself.
I wonder what would happen, too, if some of them for Sweetgrass Enterprises were translated into Native languages.
Well, that's what
well.
I was really thinking of, too, was to have them translated into Ojibwe language.
Yeah, but you had to get them somewhere so they are a legend. That's how they begin.
Yeah.
Is by passing them down, and that's what you're trying to do is pass them down.
How she can get them published, because Sweetgrass Enterprises is looking for material for children.
Well, that's what I was talking to the guy in Ottawa about, was whether or not I could get money for that, because it would cost me a lot more to have them translated,
mm-hmm.
and then I could have like one side of the book in English and the other side in Ojibwe language, because of the resurgence of the language, like
mm-hmm.
being taught in schools and stuff like that. I don't really think they have the material to teach a language other than just a collection of words, but a collection of
did you talk to Sweetgrass
fluent language
to just see, because they may be able to give you some funding sources, if particularly if it's a development of language, of materials in native languages.
The one story I did, all of the characters in the story, I used their Indian name instead of their English name, because I do speak a little Ojibwe, but not fluently. I know a lot of words and stuff, but not fluently, so I incorporated that much into the one story. And it's really effective. It's like it would really imprint into a child like what that animal is called, other than just saying, well, this animal is called this.
Are you going to get on with the interview?
Yeah, well, this is part of it. We're just not going in order. Of the work that you do, is there some of it that's most important to you? I mean, you've talked about your stories, and that sounds like you're really keen to see something happen with that. But in terms of your other work as well, what are the kinds of work that are most important for you to do?
Oh, I really like to do various things, because I like to create a one-of-a-kind thing, and then I get an idea for something else, and I'll go on and I'll make that. And I just like to keep it going like that. I don't like to do factory-style work where I make one thing and then I make 50 of that one thing, just to sell it. I'd rather go on and create something else. Because I think of it more as an art form rather than a craft. That's the way I feel about it, and it helps me too to cope, I guess, with everyday life, is just to continue on with with the traditions, more or less, and keep everything in perspective that way.
When you were young, was craft work done in your home?
My dad is a carpenter, so there's always been that creativity there. My grandmother did a lot of the traditional crafts. She made baskets and flowers and quilts and beadwork. She did. More or less to make ends meet, eh, for her.
Were you taught by her? Or did you?
I was quite young. I can remember watching her make things, and she did teach me some things. My aunt Kay, she makes quilts, so I really learned to make quilts from watching her. She's taught me a lot of things too.
Is there any particular design or color that you use in your quilts? You have any sort of colors you use?
I like to. I do one quilt. It's a specialty quilt, and it's a picture, eh? I applique the picture on it. I did one chief's head with a peace pipe in the corner and a smoke with a bear inside of it, and then moon, a turtle. With flowers on his back, representing where life was created. Some birds flying by there. And I like to, when I do the picture quilt, I like to have at least one circle in the quilt. Eh? And I do, I kind of like them to tell a story. And I'm doing a star blanket right now I'm working on. And I like to use the floral patterns. Eh? I really like to use them a lot.
Do you have meanings for the colors you use?
Not really, no. Just whatever looks really nice to me, I like.
There's very few that know the meanings of the colors anymore.
Mm-hmm. Why did you start into the writing, to the story writing?
I started writing when I was maybe 12, 14 years old. And first I started with just poetry and small short stories, and I just found it a really good way to express myself. I really liked to read a lot when I was, ever since I was really small, I liked to read, and the writing just came naturally. I never ever tried to have anything published before because I didn't think that my writing was up to a standard where it would be acceptable to myself to have anything done with it.
What changed it? What changed that feeling for you?
I guess just from practicing, the quality of the writing got better.
And why did you choose the content of your stories? Why Native stories?
Well, I started telling stories to the younger children, it really happened by accident that I was watching my younger cousin, and he said to tell him my story, so I just made up a story, and I later I developed it on paper into a really good story, and then I just went with that afterward. I did at one time do some writing about ideas and feelings about Indian people and what it was like to be an Indian person, but I felt that that was really too emotional to get my point across. Without leaving the reader upsetting.
Yeah.
So I find that the story with the moral value in it is a lot easier to write and it's easier to read.
Have you, you do storytelling then for children?
Yeah. A bunch of the smaller children down the road here, they'll get me to tell them stories if I'm sitting there by the barbecue or something.
Have you ever, do you know that there's a storytellers group now starting up in London?
No.
Yeah. I think at this point it's all women, but all women wanting to either take from literature that they've read or in some cases their own stories, and both for children and for adults to get practice and eventually to set up a storytellers group that would do some performing. Like the Storyteller School in Toronto, if you're familiar with that one.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Because they're really looking for, one of the things they're looking for is representation from all kinds of people from the community around London to have a great variety of stories that can be told.
I write them too for my own children. They're still pretty small, but when they, you know, when they're old enough, they'll be able to understand what the story is trying to teach them. And I think of it too as a tradition, even though I do create them myself, because the legends a long time ago had to be created by somebody. Like, they were created a long time ago and handed on. So I think of the storytelling too as a tradition, even though I don't tell the traditional legends, although I do know them, not some of them.
What kind of support do you get from your family for the various kinds of craft work or traditional work that you do? How do they react to what you do?
Oh, they say that looks pretty nice, or that was a good story, or I get pretty good support from them. Though I kind of neglect things when I'm busy doing something.
What about the community? What about the Native people around you? How did they support you?
Because they don't like to pay a lot of money for crafts, and so they won't buy anything if they think it's too expensive. They wanna buy stuff really cheap, and irregardless of the labor that you put into it. But
have you ever done a barter system with them?
Yeah, I did. I at the powwow up here, I took some sweetgrass baskets and I traded for some shirts and moccasins for my son at one time. But I get support from the community here, and although there are, you know, ones what will say that, you know, someone else can do better beadwork, or you know, there's that little
competition
and stuff like that too.
Yeah,
I think it's like that in all the work that you do.
Yeah,
it could be in quilts, it could be in anything that a person does. I learned to quilt, how to do the quilt baskets, and I found it very, it's to me, is really tedious. It's worse than beadwork. And to really want to do something like that, I'd have to have it instilled in me at a very young age.
Yeah.
That that's something I really want to do. And I think that's where your competition comes in, is when you when you start going to powwows or when you start going to shows. And like, because I'm a beater, and I've been beating for 11 years, and I still find that I'm not actually up there, and I've seen beadwork that's nicer than mine, but it doesn't make me feel bad.
No.
As a matter of fact, it makes me feel like I have to do an even
better job.
Yeah, you just keep striving for something better.
You learn from it.
Yeah.
What competition did they have?
Well, there was a man living across the road here. He was from South Dakota. His name was Jim Smallbear, and he taught me how to make lighter cases and earrings, and I'm really grateful to him for that. He's moved now, but that's something that will stay here now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
And he brought us his colors and his design. Beautiful.
One of the interesting things about going with Carolyn is that we would go into some homes where Carolyn would be able to teach somebody something, or where the opposite would happen. They would teach her a new way of doing it with two needles or whatever it was, so that I know for Carolyn, what she said is that it's been really a neat experience for her to be able to learn to share that.
Well, with my quilts, I sew my quilts all by hand. I don't have a sewing machine that works, so I have to do the work by hand. And it makes the quilt more expensive, eh? But people don't understand that the quilts are entirely made by hand, other than that the tops are sewing on machine and the quilting is done by hand, eh? Because they still consider those handmade quilt, even though the top is sewn on a machine. Eh?
This one she'll show you later on. It took her a year to make.
Yeah, I know how long quilts take. Cause one of my, I guess you'd call them foster mothers, because I was always fostered out as a child. She did a lot of handmade quilts, and I've seen them done right from start to finish. And it's taken her a long time. She, mm-hmm. She's an elderly woman where she is like rolls of poles, really thick poles, and she just keep twining them as she goes along. But she stitched every piece on.
What I see happening recently is a more of a cultural resurgence, like a cultural revolution among the Indian people, with a lot of younger people, a lot of people from just the next generation from myself are really wanting to experience a traditional craft and pieces of our culture, because we are seeing that it is fading out, so we are doing what we can to help to keep it, eh? And it's going to take a lot of effort on our part.
What do you think, what kind of concrete things do you think need to be done to be sure that it's maintained?
Documentation, I think, is really important. And more community effort. Rather than keeping everything on an individual basis, more community effort. I know a long time ago, I can remember when I was really small, my grandmother and a lot of the other women in the community would go to quilting bee, and they would all sit and they'd take their squares and sew it into a top, and then they'd all sit there together and quilt and talk in Indian language, and it was really nice to see that. And I think more of that would really help, more community mindedness, participation.
We found one group like that that's still going over in Oneida.
What about yourself? If I came to you and I said, okay, please, would you be willing to come to London, maybe 4 times a month, to teach quilting, if all the material was free, would you be willing to teach some of the women down there how to quilt?
Yeah, I would.
There would probably be a little bit.